Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of rumradio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and rumradio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on rumradio.org.
And the crowd went narcoleptic. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. We recently just discovered that there is an unknown universe. They just discovered it, a whole different and separate universe. I'm not talking about a galaxy, but a different whole new different universe. And as soon as we heard that, I was so excited, I immediately went out and applied for the position of center. I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. I usually tell the newcomers when they come in, you know, everybody says, you know, you're the most important person in the room. And I like to be in the rest of the crowd. And I tell the guy, I saw the woman, I says, you know, you're the most important person in the room. And then I said, besides me, or unless he catches fire. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who afford us the opportunity to get live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and down home, Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. In other words, they don't charge us. And that's free is a really great price. It's negotiable sometimes because we couldn't afford much more than free. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals. They afford us some print space from time to time. And they also like, you're always trying to get me to advertise with them, but they haven't seen any money yet. I haven't seen any money. They don't see. We're self-supporting through our own contribution. I believe that's the way to work something like this, if you can. We're not interested in making money or for someone else's misery. This is a public service that we do give back to the program. Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with the base of society. The family goes. So does the nation, so does the world. We have found most problems we have with drugs and alcohol is a breakdown of the family unit. Children have not been taught correct principles. If you teach your children correct principles, then they can teach themselves. But unless those principles are given, it's the main streets. I like to think of it as latchkey kids. They grow up as empty lot weeds. So they end up where? The gangs, the clubs, drugs, sex, work well for me, but not for long. And what we find today, this is what's going on. The downfall of part of the addiction problem came on the war with the drugs. Once we made it a war, just say no, like that would work. Like you're telling people who have no idea, that's got all the commerce, he's telling you just to say no. President Reagan, if you remember, and Nancy and all of them, you know, just say no. And so what we're going to do is if you don't believe, if you can't read my lips, we're going to put you in prison. So that filled up the prisons really quick. Let me clue you. We've lost a war. The war needs to be fought with information, education, and rehabilitation. That's how the war should be fought, not in prison time or prison terms. These are criminals, they turn to crime because, why? To fund their drugs and alcohol. 80% of all the people we find in prison are there because of drugs and alcohol. Because you're always going to get opportunity, and there'll always be that horse thief out there looking for a free ride, but for the most part, it's back to drugs and alcohol. It's an epidemic. More people die from alcohol, 5 times as many than all the other drugs combined. Wow. What a sad loss. Some really nice people, too. Some brilliant, brilliant people. Just can't stay away. A person who's not addicted doesn't understand being a foreign. He's such a nice guy. Can he just stop?
Joseph's breaking up a little bit. So he's breaking up a little bit. I don't know. So check your phone, Joseph. See if you can find a spot with a better reception there.
I'm probably spotted out at this point.
There you go. I can hear that.
Okay, it'll come in and out. Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Joseph. It's nice to be here. This is my way of giving back. I know it's your way of giving back. And I have received so much from the 12 steps and from God. And so I've studied the 12 steps. I teach the 12 steps. I also study the Bible and teach the Bible at this point. But I wasn't there 26 years ago when I started. I really didn't understand the Bible. So I had a great sponsor who stepped forward, and they called him the Step Nazi. He was really, he went by the book. He taught me the steps. We worked the steps with pen and paper, and we moved through them quite quickly. And we were thorough, but we were quick. We were quicker than we were thorough, because he realized and I realized that I would be doing more work on the steps later. So the first time we went through, we really moved through quickly, and it really helped me a lot. What I've found is that stopping is relatively easy. Staying stopped is quite a bit harder. And the reason is, in my opinion, it's the selfishness and the pride that continues on even after we've quit drinking and drugging. So he taught me a few things that were really, really valuable. He taught me that drinking is a search for God at the wrong address. He taught me that not every time I drank did I get in trouble, but every time I was in big trouble, I had been drinking. And there were other lessons, too, that were really valuable to me. So with all that to be grateful for, I'm here to see if I can help someone newer in recovery through their 12 steps. And I've found that that's really when my program took hold and took root and began to bear some fruit. I had a grasp of it and when I learned it, but I really got familiar with the steps and worked them well when I taught the steps to somebody newer. So it's a pleasure to be here, and I really what's most valuable to me about my experience in the rooms and my experience with the 12 steps from the beginning was how much the program used to include family members. It's a family disease, and it's family recovery. And we cannot, I mean, the stories in the book are full of experiences where people had a lot of contact with the family. The family needed support and love, and they gave that years ago when the program started. So one of the things I like about Rum Radio and rumradio.org is that we try to go back to the basics and go and recapture the spirit of the folks that originally started the program. And that's one of the things that we really focus on. Working with other people really, really helps. So I want our listeners to know that this is not a money-making proposition, that Joseph, to the contrary, he spends quite a bit of money to keep the website going and improving, and to keep the radio program going and improving, plus a lot of his hours. And so this is a labor of love. It's not a penny is made. Many pennies are spent. And I just want to appreciate Joseph for doing that. This particular weekend is Memorial Weekend. And this disease, it is a war. And we've had some casualties. My family, his family, people, this is life or death, folks. Life or death. And I'm lucky to be alive. I'm grateful to God to be alive, and I'm grateful to Joseph for opening this avenue where we can share our experience, strength, and hope, and maybe help you folks get some of the benefits we've gotten by helping other people. Working with others works. It really, really works. So let me give out the call-in number in case you're listening and you would like to call us and ask a question or make a comment. The call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, that's 949-534-0621. Call and be part of the program. So let me turn it back over to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Well, just as a disclaimer, this is not AA, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not NA, which is Narcotics Anonymous. This is not CA, which is Cocaine Anonymous. This is more like Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. And if you've been slacking off on your recovery, you can, and you're a part of Narcoleptics Anonymous, you can consider this a wake-up call. So we're Rum Radio and rumradio.org. We're not affiliated with any of the 27. We use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes the NA book, the green book. I like that too. There's a lot of good information. The big book, though, is the basic template of all 12-step programs. I had a lady call me the other day, or texted me, and she said, oh, she wanted to go to a recovery meeting, and she was a drug addict, but she couldn't find any NA meetings. And she said, you know, there was AA meetings around, but there was no NA meetings. What should I do? Harold, what should I do? No, you go to where it really doesn't matter. You go to AA if that's what's closed, so you could go to NA, and then work the 12 steps with a sponsor. And you find the sponsor. We have it on the website, how to find the sponsor. Importantly, how to find the sponsee. All the information's on there. But you start working the steps, and the steps are the answer, is the solution to drug and alcohol addiction. It's a solution of mind, body, and spirit. And a lot of the, like, rational recovery and some of the other ones, they take the spirit out of it. And, you know, and I like to think of it as that the letter of the law bringeth death, and the spirit of the law giveth life. And the spirit of this thing is to realize who's in charge of this thing. You know, this is a spiritual disease primarily. But you don't know that because you're in the throes. So AA's got the template of that recovery. And out of the big book, this is the basic text. I like to read how it works. Chapter 5 pretty well explains how this thing works for those folks that are not aware. Because rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There are those who do not or cannot give themselves to this simple program. They're such unfortunates. They're men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we are like now. You have decided you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness of our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember, we deal with alcohol, cunning, powerful. There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. It just availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection with care, with complete abandon. How are the steps? Here are the steps we took, which is suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that our better selves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, source for prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us explained, what an order. We can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our lives, our own lives. E, that's step one, by the way. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcohol. I mean, attacked by bugs like you wouldn't believe. I think the adversary has control of the lesser creatures, I think. B, that probably no human power could have, relieved our alcoholism. That's step two. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And that's that. So, our guest. Oh, and by the way, happy, I hope you have a memorable Memorial Day. This is a time we remember our fallen kindred dead, the folks that went to war for us to make sure that we enjoy the banner of liberty and choice. So I try to remember that. I was in Vietnam. I'm a combat veteran. I have friends that never made it back. So to us, that's, you know, to some of us, it's really profound. My experience with most people they don't remember the soldier as much when the war is over. You know, but you got to remember that's just the way the human condition is. So we have Dick Satoro with us. Sorry it took so long, Dick. You there?
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Good.
Great.
Very good.
The way we do this, Dick, is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And in a general way, a lot of folks miss that part in AA. It's in CA and NA. General way means we don't give other people's names, specifics, or for your sponsor. But we give you the lay of the land to show you what happened to us, where we came from, what we overcame, and where we are now. So tell me, when was the first time you drank or did drugs and the light went on?
Oh, wow. First of all, hello, everybody. My name is Dick. I am an addict.
Hi, Dick.
Not anymore. Apparently my first drug of choice was getting dizzy when I was a kid. I don't know if that counts. I would spin around in the circle, and I told my dad, this is my alternative to getting high. Well, if you weren't twirling around, you'd be pre-basing in an abandoned treehouse? I didn't know. Who knew? 20-some-odd years later, where I'd be. I have now 2 years, 4 months, and 9 days without abusing drugs.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Now I'm addicted to eBay, Candy Crush, and YouPorn.
Candy Crush. I'm always invited to play Candy Crush. What is that?
One step at a time. One click at a time, Joe.
Okay.
It's a horribly addicting game. I don't know when it became fashionable or marketable to call things addictive, but every app game I see online, it's like, this is the most addictive game ever. Clearly, they don't know what addiction is. So they must be really bored. I had 12 years clean. Then I turned 13. my first way I got started for me was Ritalin.
Yes.
The most overprescribed drug there is, and it was like in the fifth grade. By the time I was in middle school, I was like, you know, hey, go trade me a hit for some tater tots. But
there you go.
Well, I'll throw my chocolate milk. Just give me a push. I got it all. What do you want? Adderall, Barney, CDs, Pokemon. It was not a good prescription for me. I think, you know, it was just a normal kid that learned more by doing and seeing and not by sitting in a chair looking at a chalkboard. I remember the conversation asking the doctor, is this going to change me? And just, I could almost, maybe I think I wanted it, and because I could, it seemed like a hollow promise. Oh, yeah, no, this won't affect you at all. And then I think it was like in college at some point, my doctor was like, you know, this is addictive. You're going to have to, you know, might want to think about getting off of this stuff. But, of course, they had no plan for that. I'd say ginkgo biloba, if any parents are listening and their kids are, you know, are giving their kids Ritalin, it's basically prescription speed, or rots the brain more quickly depending on how you take it.
And it robs the bones of calcium and teeth.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's a real thief.
How old were you now? Okay, so you're taking how old?
I'm 35 now.
Yeah, but how old were you then when you were taking the drugs?
Oh man, this was probably it was literally middle school. I do a lot of recovery shows, and addicts, they definitely know when someone's telling the truth, and I find I can always connect with the audience if I'm honest and open, and hopefully I can help them, heal through laughter. It's been a real, amazing tool for me in my recovery. Being able to laugh at myself, that was the first thing. I think the first meeting I went to was the Thirsty Fellowship.
Oh,
let's
back up a little bit, because we made a jump to light speed from he's taking drugs as a kid and then in recovery. I mean, there's something happened in between, I'm sure.
Sure. Well, yeah, I was just going to interject that at that first meeting I went to, it was people's ability to laugh at themselves really was the first thing that attracted me to recovery. I wanted to be able to do that. So, but we can get back to that more. I'm sorry. I always was when I was 15, I ran away from home and I joined the circus. Secondly, my parents insisted on dropping me off. But, it was, I've always valued my independence and, I've always been sort of maybe a little bit of a black sheep, but that was something that really was a wake-up call for me later when I realized I was, a slave to drugs, and that's, really made me fight for my recovery to gain that back, and that's, one of the many reasons that I value my recovery so much. I was kind of on the fringe a lot. I was a political activist for a while. I was too paranoid to smoke weed for a minute. I was doing a Bush parody and thought I might get thrown in a gulag. But once Barack was elected, I went to Montreal and, I was kind of let down my guard. It's a lot more... anything goes kind of I call it a country, it's pretty autonomous sort of place, but their laws are not quite as strict here, I've always kind of worked towards being able to be self-sufficient as an entertainer, and I have to take full responsibility for my actions, and take responsibility for my recovery. I can look at things in the past, but now it's I like to consider failing forward as long as I learn from my mistakes. I'm not going to make them again, so I won't go pointing fingers or anything. I've had some darker periods in my life, and lost a little bit of hope, and I guess a little bit of self-worth to where I would put something in my body that I knew wasn't good for me. You were talking about Reagan earlier, and I mean that was always something I felt like, when they lump all the drugs together, and you sort of realize that some they're not necessarily all on the same level, then you just sort of lose all trust. But I think I knew better. And I remember using anytime I always valued having a strong relationship with my higher power. It was strained a lot, obviously. A lot of my prayers would wind up being foxhole prayers, and give thanks to the Great Spirit, Mother Earth, and thanks for my blessings, and please don't have the DA break down my door, It's amazing. I definitely I'm in this relate to the you know, wanting to have joined, should have joined the Paranoid Anonymous that you mentioned in the beginning, because that's ultimately, you know, there was no high in it. It was just a vicious cycle, and I tried to stop on my own, and you know, had abstained, but you know, didn't have the tools yet to, you know, when, you know, when it hit the fan, how to cope. And you know, I hadn't had any experience with 12-step recovery, and now I have those tools. And you know, one thing about my sponsor, obviously, is a, you know, great part of my life, and you know, he says a lot of things that really resonate with me. But you know, one thing that comes to mind was that, you know, you're an addict, you're going to have thoughts of using. That doesn't mean, you know, you're working the program wrong. It's just that you don't have to act on those thoughts. And so that's I can't begin to express all the gratitude I have for a certain fellowship, which has really just taught me so much. And I was a very big skeptic when I first was in the rooms. You know, I would look for things that I.
Let me ask you this. Now, when was your moment, your jumping off point, your moment of clarity? What did it look like? Was it jail?
Well, I was arrested. And that's where the title of the blog episode references. I know there was some speculation of what that meant, but yeah, I was arrested, and I won't get into all the details, but I was I had a crack pipe in my underwear, which I think is pretty low point. You know, I was facing time, and I'd been sort of keeping my using. I'd always been very, you know, somewhat private person, and had a lot of trust issues, and I'm still working through a lot of that. But I was forced to take step one when I had to come clean to my, you know, friends and family. I mean, it was going to be in the papers in a matter of, you know, time, you know, so that was actually such a weight off of my shoulders. And I do remember, you know, before talking to my parents, you know, praying probably as hard as I ever have before, and just, you know, I guess there was sort of a sense of serenity when, you know, there was basically, there was no option. It was a, you know, it was surrender. When I did, you know, it became clear to me that the only person I was really fooling was myself. No one had anything they could kind of pin on me per se that said I was an addict. You know, and it's like the pink elephant in the room. You know, people don't necessarily know how to address it. But once I came clean, you know, I felt this enormous weight off of my shoulder. You know, I didn't cover everything up. And that really led me, not to jump so far ahead to...
Let me ask you this. Now, I know...
But telling him my addiction has been a real blessing, you know.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Did you like the title? I used that about the rocks in your underwear.
Yeah, I think it was good. I think it was a good, you know, it piqued people's interest and curiosity, I think. But, yeah, to bring some clarity,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, even you knew what it was about, but they probably going, what is he talking about?
I was in
about?
The ship, but I, yeah, oh, excuse me, but I didn't bleep my pants, so. I think the reality of it was far more embarrassing, you know, than had I done that. But yeah, no, I think it's a good title. It took me reading it about 20 times to appreciate it, but I like that. I think you're a poet and a humorist, and your style is you know, grows on me. The more I listen
thank
to your
radio
station.
That's not before. The general consensus in the program. I'm glad you mentioned that, but matter of fact, I was dueling with a bunch of old timers today in one of the chat rooms, and the argument was that I what was the term, Harold? I was too
egregious, ostentatious.
What was
ostentatious.
It? Ostentatious.
I don't know. He told me. He says, you know, like the
Austin Powers.
Over,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I said, well, this is a show, man. You know, it's a radio show. You're supposed to be out there, you know, you try to get people's interest. You know, the thing is, they don't get me. And I believe a lot of it is envy. You get that? You get any of that?
Well,
and it's a shame because we're doing a good work. You know, like, hey, it's given to me to give out, and it helps people. What are you worried about? You know, take care. But, you know, that's the way it is sometimes in the program. You know, it's a new idea. We're coming up with an old new idea. This is not a new idea. This is an old idea that we've made new. But this is the same stuff that they did 70 years ago. You know, so it's not new, but it's new to them. You know, and so any new idea is first met with ridicule, then violent opposition. And once
right.
the violent opposition passes away, acceptance is being self-evident. So that means the old-timers will finally have to go by the way before this thing will catch on. But we're making moves. My experience, when did you get a...
I'm sorry, I was going to say I aim to, you know, it's equally as important for me, I think, to be able to... and rewarding to be able to make an old timer laugh as much as a newcomer. So I try to do that in my writing and but anyway, I didn't mean to. That was just
The point is, I'm trying to find out. Okay, when you got to the to the point where sponsor, right? You found a sponsor.
Right. Yep. Immediately started, you know, taking suggestions, you know, going to meetings.
Well, let me ask you this. I like to refine it down a little bit. Now,
sure.
In the big book, it gives simple, you know, we always say, oh, give simple, direct, simple instruction, right? Clear-cut instruction, right?
Right.
Except nobody can figure out what that clear-cut instruction looks like. It's real simple and clear-cut, but nobody really, you know, we wave around it. Three times it says, one time it says, go find the prospect and start working on them, right? One. Two, it says, if the person you're working with, your prospect you're working with is not interested, go find another. Go search out another. That's another. We have search out another, go find the prospect, and on page 18 it says, the man making the approach speaks of having the answer. So three times it says we're supposed to go out as someone who has been able to maintain at least some a semblance of recovery. Now, there's no time limit. I suggest five. Nobody buys it. But to get them in the trenches quick, but with today, it's like, okay, you're supposed to, the newcomer comes in, doesn't know any the jargon, the culture, doesn't know anything, what a sponsor is, steps, nothing, and we're supposed to expect this guy to figure it out. I don't know where it came from. It's ludicrous, but you present an idea like that, people go nuts. Hey, wait a minute, it's a big book. Hey, Joseph, you're telling us we're doing it wrong? Yes, actually. Actually, yes,
well,
that's the... So how did you find your sponsor? Did you find him?
Well,
he found you?
No, well, basically I had heard, you know, in asking around and just talking to people about sponsorship, you know, the basic suggestion of finding a sponsor who has at least worked the steps once. So that was my criteria, and as far as I knew, two people in my, you know, within a one-hour radius. I was in a fairly small town environment. So I asked one person, and, you know, it seemed like they kind of had it, who was basically in my state, and they seemed like their plate was fairly full. And, you know, had gotten some suggestions from them, and there was another meeting, which was about equal distance, and they're from another state, and they had the same DOC as myself, so I thought that it might be easier to relate to them, you know, or for them to relate to me, for us to relate to each other. So I had asked them, and I had, you know, I've been with him ever since.
Okay. And then did he start work steps right away? Did you lollygag for a while? Wanted to get your feet wet? You want to percolate?
Well, I had a lot of trust issues. Like I said, I had a court date that was pending for about a year. So I was basically, I was in a position where I would have liked to have defended myself, but, you know, that could have just, you know, gotten twisted and basically would have made it worse for myself. So I had a, you know, an added, you know, resistance to sharing openly. So, I would say I dragged my feet a little bit at first. I mean, you know, that first step, of course, was, you know, I had taken, but of course, you know, we used the workbook and, you know, did work that step with my sponsor.
How long did it take you?
Well, I'm guesstimating just off the top of my head. I'm going to say it was maybe about 4 months before I was working step four, perhaps. And then, you know, he had said that, you know, the steps one, two, and three are like a combination punch, pretty much, and that, you know, he cut me a little slack when I got to step four. But, you know, it was about... It took longer than it, you know, it would have if it was under different circumstances. But right now, I'm currently working on step four, and I'm the kind of person that was thinking, you know, as I was looking ahead, and you know, I like to think that I work some of the other steps day to day, you know, with you know, when I'm wrong, trying, you know, admitting it and so forth, but I realize the steps are in order for a reason. But I feel like that it's, you know, I'm absorbing a lot, and I try to, you know, practice, you know, the steps and the principles.
In my opinion, you could work the first three steps sitting at a traffic light.
Right.
As long as you're not,
they can. So
as long as you're not, hold on. As long as you're not sitting in light in New York City, you know why?
The distraction.
Because everybody knows that the New York minute is made up of the annoyed nanosecond. It's a little too quick in New York to do it at the traffic light. But for all intents and purposes, we did the first three steps on how it works. A, B, and C is 1, 2, and 3. We do it almost every meeting. So those steps are pretty well in agreement. We made an agreement to do something. We didn't do anything, but we made an agreement to do something. Okay, so we got that. Now we have the ominous, the fear-based, the attempt at war and peace, step four. The step four that sometimes nobody ever finishes. Sometimes the step four gets so large that it goes into a second edition movie. You know, we want to make sure that we do everything, and by doing that, we can stall it off until the crack of doom. You know, so I'm going to do step. Are you still working on step four? Yeah. Hey, it's only been 27 years. How's it coming? Well, I got two publishers ready to do the book.
Jeffrey step four and thought, oh, this is going to take at least 2 years here. But I, you know, I've heard suggestions of, well, do one question a day. And when I did those steps, like I said, it was with my sponsor. It was with the workbook and so on. But yeah, I feel like I think I heard this in one of your episodes last night I was listening to, where a lot of people might flip because they take too darn long working the steps.
That was the original experience.
My sponsor broke it down to me. He said, look, man, I'm not trying, you know, I don't work for, you know, blank A. You know, I'm just telling you what, you know, what's kept me clean for 20 years. And that kind of broke it down for me, you know, agree that it's a simple program for complicated people. Not that it doesn't take a lot of work and effort, but I'm the kind of person, and I think in general, my people, like, you know, we can overcomplicate the heck out of something.
Sure. I'll do that in a heartbeat. I wrote to the traditions, by the way. Right? I mean, the traditions are simple. I wrote to them. How do you write to something simple without making it complicated? I mean, you know, that's amazing.
I try to do that with my comedy. Yeah.
It took me a very long time to do a four step. Years and years. I hate to tell you that. I even did a meeting one time and asked people how many people took years to do a four step and how many years. One guy 8 years. One guy 10 years. Wow. One guy 30 years, never worked a four step, but he was so crazy as a loon, but never worked a four step. So the way it worked for me was I did 1, 2, 3. I did the AA two step. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and how about 4? My sponsor would say, you're not going to get the promises until you work 4. So, but I was staying sober. You know how I did that? I was determined to get the program of recovery through the process of osmosis. Are you familiar with osmosis? If you sit in enough meetings, the message is going to come through the floor, up the chair, up the legs of the chair, up your butt, and into your head. Yes. So now you've accomplished recovery through osmosis. You got it. Of course, you know, that works for a while. The meetings will keep you sober. They kept me sober. Not everybody, but it kept me sober. I go a lot of meetings, a lot of pretty girls, funny guys like you and me. You know, the comedy is part of our deal. You know, I'm amateur night, but... What I've realized that humor. You ever see the Two Masks of Drama? You ever seen that?
It sounds. You're not talking about the comedy tragedy, or
It's pathos. Okay. Pathos. Yeah, pathos. The tragedy. Pathos and comedy, and then it makes drama. Right. That's the drama of life. But see, you can't have real comedy without tragedy or without pathos. So since we've lived. We've had that pathos. We've had that trauma. We've had that tragedy. T.S. Eliot said, show me a hero and I'll show you a tragedy.
Huh. Yeah. I think it was Chaplin, or I can't remember exactly who, they said comedy is tragedy plus time. So,
plus,
you know,
time.
Takes time to heal.
Yeah, let me give you this. Oh, about 6 months ago, I'm sitting at my gym, and I'm sitting at the pool, and I've always been an athlete, but I've gotten age. It just happens. Don't get old. Whatever you do, don't get old. And I'm looking at my body, and I'm getting, you know, I've got the estrogen going, and I got a pot belly, and I've always been an athlete. And I'm looking at my body, and all of a sudden, it struck me funny. I struck me funny, and I had this just so satisfying laugh. And then at that moment, I realized what the laughing Buddha laughs at. The laughing Buddha always laughs at himself, and he's never without a poke. You know why? Because when you laugh, the world laughs with you. And you cry alone.
That's the truth. Yeah.
So the best comedians ever shall always make fun of themselves. Always. People love it. You know that, you know, to find the fault, the fool in you makes other people enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I figure when I finish my fourth step, like I'll probably have a, you know, 8 hours of material. But no, I've got so many.
Or you would have hung yourself.
But no, I mean, it's enough. I mean, I realize it's all about becoming a better person, you know, and to be of, you know, use to the planet, and, you know, and the paradox of, you know, by helping other people is gonna, you know, it's gonna help myself. But first, I got to be able to help myself. I've seen one of those lists of the character defects, and I pretty much could like check, you know, 99% of them off, but. I found out that I'm a perfectionist and a procrastinator.
I don't get anything done perfectly.
Exactly. Or I'm perfecting the art of doing nothing. But no, people call me a procrastinator. I like to think of it as I'm a multitasker. I like to sit around and do nothing, you know, but until I got multiple things to do, then I like to exercise and eat and masturbate. And I know I'm not the only one because the sign at the gym says, please wipe down your equipment after use. So,
sure.
I guess it's obvious I'm not going back to curves. But
yeah, my suggestion would be is that I have it on the website. If you haven't been, you've been to the website, right? Have you been?
Of course. Yeah.
The Rum Radio? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. There's some really good sections on there. One of them, I go through the steps. I go through the traditional fourth step. I get it all laid out. I also do an abbreviated step. Abbreviated, yeah. And I've done this with Francis. Works really well. And I got this. This was around probably about 65 years ago. And I got it from a guy that had done it, but he lost the paper, so I had to wing some of it. But I think I got it down. All you put down on your fourth step is the name, the date, and the incident. That's it. The name, the date, and the incident. The big book only asks that it has to be written. It gives a suggestion as to the format, but that doesn't, you don't have to do it that way. It's just a suggestion. So,
yeah, I'm
name,
talking
the date,
about the other fellowship with the character defects.
Let me finish. So once you have that basic information, now when you sit down with your sponsee, you go through everything else is laid out in the big book. You go through the character defects, you go through the fear inventory, you go through the positive inventory, you do it all. You lay it all out, but now you have the basic information to do that. I look at like lifting a couch. So the sponsor's on one side of the couch and your sponsee's on the other side of the couch and you lift the couch instead of putting it all on the sponsee. So all the information that's necessary to continue on the step will be derived at that point. Now, some stuff is going to come up later because they're not considering it a problem. Most people do more than one fourth step. But now you got them in action and you got them through a fifth step, which is huge. The fifth step is really important. So you get them through quick. The big book says thorough, pay off handsomely, but you don't have to be thorough, rob timely. You don't want to rob timely. You want to get them through, because my experience is once you get them through all 12s, even if they go drink again, which not usually, there's no guarantee, but once you get them through all 12, you've ruined their drinking career. Yeah, I'll give you the newcomer's life's blood to AA, right? And NA. It's the newcomer. That's the newcomer. The old timer's the backbone. But relapse is the soul, because there's nothing sort tormented is a head full of AA and a belly full of booze or a belly full of drugs. It's just going to be that way. So once you get them through the 12, what's going to happen is you've ruined their drinking and drugging career. They're never going to drink and drug again with impunity. And now we leave the light on so they can find us.
Right, right. And chances are they probably ruined their career before they got there.
But
absolutely. Like, I don't, yeah, I mean, I, like I said, like it was, you know, it was a cycle of just sort of chaos when I, you know, towards the end of my using. And, you know, looking back, I love the, you know, people say, you know, play the tape out to the end. I heard someone share, you know, fast forward the tape to the end if you have any thoughts of using, like, you know, don't forget the your bottom.
You know how the best way to remember a bottom? Work with another addict. Work with another alcoholic. They'll remind you of your bottom. If you want to see what your bottom look like, go get the new man. He'll show you exactly what the bottom look like.
Right.
They're full of bottom.
My sponsor mentioned something also that helped too, is he pointed out the fact, because like I said, when I came in, I had so many misconceptions about the different fellowships and so forth, but, you know, I didn't realize that once I worked the steps, I get to work them again and again. And so that sort of, you know, nipped my the perfectionist in the bud. You know, I just You know, it's the same with writing. You know, kind of get down that first draft. You're going to rewrite it anyway. If you try to write it perfectly,
oh, yeah.
You're going to do everything.
Especially with poetry. I drive myself nuts doing poetry like that. You know, because I'll do one, and it, you know, and then it'll be like a flow, and it really good, and then I'll do it again, and I'll do it again, and I'll do it again. And it's usually, but I get to the point where finally I'll go, I'm tired of looking at it, it's done.
Right, right. Yeah. And then
I can't put another word in there.
Yeah.
And it's the creative process. The 4 through 9, right, is step 10, right? Step 10 are steps 4 through 9 in a single package taken in the present.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
So people a lot of say, oh, well, I do all the steps 7 times a year or something, you know, whatever, you know. I've done them. I said, there's no reason to hash up that old crap again. You've done that. Ooh. Move on.
Right.
This
I heard
is,
like
unless
the first
this is
round, the first time it's about the, you know, the substance, and then it's, you know, it starts, you know, like, I love that they say it's just the disease is the, you know, the substance.
Emotional.
You know, it's sort of the close of the problem, but really get to the core of it. You know, there's a lot more work to do, and but the onion, yeah.
It's called causes and conditions. We get
and
down to the causes
change,
and conditions,
you know,
and that's what step 10 does. See, and let me tell you, you're really not going to get the steps. You're not really get it until you work through it with another sufferer. Until you've sponsored someone through the steps, you're not going to get it.
Wow. So that's
step five
that's
tells, yeah.
The spiritual awakening comes
step five
when
tells
you're
it.
Doing that with us. With
step five tells you. Yeah. Step five tells you. It says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong.
Wow.
Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So what are they saying? Okay, not only do I have to speak a fifth step with complete candor, I have to listen to one who listens to a fifth step. A sponsor. Yeah, so until you've heard a fifth step, you still didn't belong. You were circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and now it's another crash and burn.
Huh.
It's sort of like it's like the lost statement. You know, I say that people go, "Where'd he come up with this stuff?"
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody. Yeah, I mean, that definitely. It's interesting. It's like, but once you know, and that's the beauty of your program is you shed a lot of light on things. You know, once you know, you can't not notice. And anytime I hear that, I will think of it. And I mean, and it of course makes me think of, you know, we can only keep what we have by giving it away. And
yeah.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I mean, I hope I'm not getting ahead of myself doing recovery comedy kind of where I'm at, having not, you know, worked through the steps yet myself, much less sponsored anybody. But, you know, I feel like, you know, within the room, so to speak, you know, it's essentially sharing, and it's, you know, it's kind of where I'm at. And you know, I've gotten some good feedback from people, but I do realize the importance of, you know.
It's the whole, you know, the steps are recovery.
Really,
it's the steps.
You know,
let me tell you what's happened. What's happened in the rooms, and NA is a reflection of AA. I don't care who's jumping up and down about it. Of course it is. And matter of fact, I interviewed Kathy Kinnan Lindert, who is Jimmy K. Kinnan's daughter.
Wow.
She wrote the book about her experience and his experience with Bill. She met Bill W. when she was 6 years old.
Really? Wow.
And how AA funded NA several times to keep it afloat.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
You know, see, to me, I don't go with the singleness of porpoise. I don't think it holds water.
Say that again.
Singleness of porpoise. Right. Singleness of porpoise.
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, Bill wrote a little shtick about singleness of purpose, that alcoholics should be with alcoholics, drug addicts with drug addicts, that kind of deal, the separation between the two. Yeah, and that goes against the third tradition about bringing a drug addict in and him helping thousands of people back in, you know, 70 years later. Evidently, Bill didn't get his own memo. So I don't...
I thought you said singleness and porpoise.
Singleness of porpoise. I call it singleness of porpoise because it doesn't hold water. But a lot of the old-timers,
they try to find something. I'm going to have to play back slow motion rather than fast forward to the end and listen to this again.
I believe that if we put a united front against the disease, we're stronger.
Absolutely.
The bigger that your program could beat up my program serves no good.
Yeah, a friend of mine who I believe has been on the show before. I was talking to her last night, and she said, speaking about the different fellowships, and she said, I'm paraphrasing, but when the seas are rough, any port will do, essentially, and. You made me think of that too. Like I said, I'm down to. Unfortunately, I lost my home group 2 weeks ago, and I'm gonna be hitting a lot more of a thirsty.
Did you get banned?
No, we just 6 years. They've been trying to keep the doors open, and God knows there's
they closed.
Enough people should be there, but it's like they say, it's for people who want it, not need it. If it was for people, everybody who needed it was there, we wouldn't be able to shut the doors.
This is my concept. If step five, if going hearing, a fifth step became a rite of passage, that club would still be in business.
Say that again. If
step five, hearing is fifth step, becomes a rite of passage, you don't belong until you've heard a step. You don't belong. You're visiting until you hear a fifth step. You can't share a meeting until you've worked the fifth step. You can't be a GSO unless you're worked the fifth step. You can't be a DCM until you worked the fifth step. Oh, you can clean the ashtrays, you can make the coffee, but you can't do anything of any substance until you hit a fifth step. You don't belong here. You're still visiting. I got to go out and do something. Oh, I got to undo something. Damn, I want to sit in the meeting and chat and look pretty good and laugh. You want me to do something? No, I don't think so. Your club would still be in existence. That's how they did it. That's how the begin. That's how. Yeah, sure. You couldn't. You could. You really. They had a thing called a surrender, right? You went to the hospital to find your pigeon. They call them pigeons or sponsees at the time.
Okay.
You went to the hospital because that's where the fruit was. That's where they were finding them in the hospitals. And detox, 6 days, Sister Ignatia, the whole shtick, right? So you'd go to the hospital and you find a prospect. Guy's desperate, right? He's in detox. You tell him you got a solution. You have a nice chat with him. You give him a day or two. He says, I've had enough. What can I do so I don't have to come back here again? This is my third trip. I don't think I'm going to make a four. Okay, look. All right. You do the surrender. You get on your knees, and you do your first three steps right there at the hospital. Now I'm going to take you to an AA meeting. And within a couple of days, you're going to work the rest of the steps, six of them. So you're going to do your restitution steps. You're going to do that. And guess what you're going to do after a couple of days? No more than a week. Guess what? You're going to the hospital.
Isn't that a bit too soon?
And that's when it was 50% got it right away and the other 25% after a couple relapses. That's how it worked.
Okay. And so you've definitely had the experience, and like I said, I will definitely be listening to this again and catching myself taking notes, but I'm like, this is going to be archived. So.
Yeah, well, I try to put the right information. This is correct information. This is nothing new. King Solomon said there was nothing new under the sun, but that was before Facebook. Back then, he called it Bathsheba book. And she would book often. She would always be booking somewhere. He's always chasing her around. He's got 500 wives. He's chasing Bathsheba. Hey, what's up with that?
Joe will be here every Sunday. Try the coffee. It's delicious.
So tell us about your comedy now. Let's see, this comedy is...
Yeah, sure. Well, like I said, first meeting I went into, you know, someone had said something and it was just, really just kind of broke the tension of being there. You know, comedy is a release of tension. I know how I felt good doing that. And as I was, I was on probation for, for a long period of time. Luckily I had a background in performing in comedy, but I was always playing characters. And, once I did the, like I said, the removed the mask in step one, that was so liberating. And I realized, I was enough of a character. I had enough experience in life to draw on. And as I was processing, having to look at myself and be able to get honest, I started processing it through writing because it was a necessary release on the valve. The tension that was creating was able to see myself and my defects and get honest, being able to not make light of it because, it was being truthful. But after being truthful, if I could find a way to laugh at myself, I found that very therapeutic. And I studied Native American clowning, which is very akin to shamanism. Like they play an important role in a lot of their traditions, from the Sundance and so forth. And what the Native clown does is he basically holds a mirror up to society. So people laugh at the clown or the comedian, and subconsciously they're laughing at themselves and their own humanity and fault, and through that creates a space for healing. And so I had an understanding of that. I had done a tribute show to Will Rogers for a while, the Cherokee Cowboy.
How cool.
Not the restaurant. Did you
listen to that bear? They hold up a mirror?
Yeah, like actually the Lakota Sioux, the Native clowns, they would sometimes wear mirrored glasses, and people would be doing
You know what, that's interesting. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, through a glass darkly, face to face, I don't see myself like other people see me, and I don't know myself like other people know me. But then, so Thomas Merton said, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, we would truly be humble. And Saran, a French philosopher, said, if we could see ourselves like other people see us, we would disappear on the spot. And Robert Browning, the plowboy poet, said, if we could see ourselves, at the poetry to allow, so if we could see ourselves like other people see us, many a foolish notion it would dispel. So it was interesting where they use the reflect, look at you.
Yeah.
And you want to have a laugh? You.
Right, yeah. And I think that actually I go to a lot of conventions, one speaker had said, I think it was kind of the statement N.A. gives, which sort of, I'm not sure if it's in other fellowships, but it's basically where I'll just make the point that he made, and I'm not affiliating myself with any fellowship, but it said, if we don't mention what our substance of choice was, and we don't necessarily get into specifics of our higher power, then we have everything in common. And not to say people couldn't, that's not important.
I agree, 100%.
I agree. If you said we disappear, we are all one, and that's a big Native, actually, since we're talking about Native culture. I went to see a medicine woman once, and I told her, that there's a possibility of having some Cherokee on both sides of my family, and, that I had a lot of respect for their culture, and she said, we're all one, we're all related. So,
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, we're all our brother's keeper. That's what Cain said, what happened to your brother. He said, am I my brother's keeper? And he said, damn straight you are. Where is he? Oh, you're in trouble now, kiddo. Man, you know, he decided to take the low road. But anyway, is there any shows that you want to mention on the air right
Absolutely.
Now that people could find you or website,
sure.
any of that?
Yeah, all of the above. Very much seeking to be of service for any sort of conventions. You can find me on my website, dick-jokes.com, dick-jokes.com. You could put in /recovery, or you can find the recovery link on the website. There's email links at the top of my website on all the pages. And I've got links at the bottom of the recovery page to some upcoming events and as they develop. What do I want to plug? It's coming up, actually. If you're familiar with the Recovery Squad All-Star Band, is going to be performing Pennsylvania. They've got an amazing combination of performers from everything from Aerosmith to SNL band. I'm sorry, Live. But they're going to be performing, and it is going to be in Saturday the 27th of September. And if you go to the bottom of my website, you can find a link to that. That is going to be in Pennsylvania, and that is called the Rally in the Valley. Should be a lot of fun. So free to the public. They may actually bring in some other comedians and have a separate comedy show, which would be more recovery-centric audience. But it will be an amazing time, and also kind of tying in, mental well-being and so forth, and with recovery. So there's different things going on that and different outreach. Also wanted to plug.
May is Mental Health Month.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to be hosting the East Coast NA Convention comedy show, which will be coming up in June. I'm also going to be hosting the Ocean Gateway area comedy show, which is a lot of fun. That's Halloween weekend, and that's in Ocean City, Maryland. Again, my website, dick-jokes.com/recovery, or just go to dickjokes.com and find the recovery link. You can find some memes I've created from some of my jokes. I have a lot of people at conventions, you know, aren't sure if they're in the right place, and so with, you know, my apologies to David Letterman and Jeff Foxworthy, I came up with the top 12 signs you might need recovery. If you've ever turned down a trip to Disneyland because you heard they have a policy of no cutting lines, you might need recovery. all the way to if air is a trigger, you might need recovery.
Wait a minute, I need a gulp. Gulp of air, man.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's some memes I've created from those. I'm working on putting together a little postcard book in the future with some of those. Like I said, I love to be of service, as a host. I'm working towards having a feature act for comedy shows. Right now I've got about 20 minutes that I'm performing, and I've got, you know, another 10 minutes that I'm working on developing, getting up on stage and stuff, and as much as I can. I'm actually sitting in the parking lot of a comedy club right now in my conversion van. and you're in the woods.
I'm in the woods. I'm in the dark. I'm in the dark in the woods.
Well,
I've been
there
before.
So that'll be.
But he can see the tree.
My luck, I'm going to find. My luck, I'm going to find the drunk bear that needs a sponsor.
Well, it is Memorial Day. I'm in the downtown parking lot, so I'm sure I could find plenty of sponsees, but I'm not quite ready yet.
Oh, they're all over the place. See, that's the thing. We wait for them to walk through the door, you know, like all of a sudden, like, and then we expect them to go find us, you know, like, hey, how about going to the Salvation Army or going to the hospital or going to the rehab? The rehabs are always dying for people to come in. I've talked to some of them. Chris Raymer, who was on the show, he says, yeah, he says, we're always looking for people to come. We've already gathered in the sheep. All we got to do is get off our butt and go get them. They're there.
Right. I love doing, I do H&I when I can, and, in the Rally in the Valley, we're going to be doing, you know, me and some of the other performers, we're going to be going to a homeless shelter and some other groups trying to do different kinds of outreach, and literally, you know, I haven't turned down any, anybody asking me to come to a convention. If I can, you know, if I can get there, I'll be there.
Good.
But how soon before someone could, do you think it's when is someone ready to take on a sponsee?
Well, I'm a little out there, so I would say once they've worked the fifth step, they can start working with it. They're available to be a temporary sponsor. All sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for a day or temporary for a lifetime or anywhere in between. The only criteria is you have to stay one step ahead of your sponsee. Most of my sponsees won't do it. Oh, I have to work 12. I have to work a 12 before I work a sponsee. Okay, now at least he's made a commitment. But I believe at step 5, they're ready to go. They can put somebody through the first 4. They've done them. And they're still fresh.
Yeah.
Wow. It's nice and fresh. They know what they're talking about.
Right.
They have the information. And they have a sponsor in case they need something to bounce off of. Grand sponsor. Hey, cool. Let's get moving. And once my sponsees once they start sponsoring, I don't hear from them. They have no need for me. They're sponsoring. They're sponsors. They got all the information that they possibly need. Yeah. And that's the way it's supposed to be. I don't like an entourage out of the deal.
Now that actually gives me a little bit more of a drive. Another thing my sponsor told me my last anniversary wrote on my card is that it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, but being able to you know, get a taste of that 12th step after step 5, well, I think will help me work through step 4 with a little bit more diligence, and I'm just gotta get out of my own way.
It doesn't have to be War and Peace. Do the outline. Call your sponsor. Hey, you know, I had one guy say, look, it was 8 years, he said, and I stayed sober in the meeting. I went somewhere I couldn't get to a meeting. He says, and the craving came, and I barely made it back. See, that's the problem. The meetings have become the solution. The meetings are one side of the triangle, which is the fellowship.
Okay,
the solution,
right.
The solution of the steps. If you're not working the steps, you're not in the solution. If you're not
right.
in the solution, you're still in the problem.
Right. Yeah. One thing I'd like to throw out there, and it's something that they talk about in the literature, it's touched on, but it doesn't seem to get, at least in my experience, delved into too much, and that's, you know, meditation. And there's some great definitions of it in there. It's a thought without judgment in one reference, or that, you know, someone's described it as prayer, talking to your higher power, and meditation is listening. I had a background in Buddhist meditation prior to, kind of going down my rocky road. And I think that Jimmy's background founded the other fellowship had some Buddhist background too, and I found that to be very practical. Just single point meditation. It's not a religion or nothing. It's just for single point meditation, and
Right.
Let me
give you this.
I have this on the website.
It's a meditation post. It's on one of the clippers. It says, meditation, attempt at thinking not to think.
And I go through, and then the picture has
a guy with a cup in his hand, and he's got a little sign that says, meditation ruined my life. And I go through some simple meditation. I tell my sponsor, okay, this is a way, good way to start. You get on your knees when you pray. You're talking to God. Stay twice as long on your knees as you prayed, and just stay in the feeling. That's the beginning of meditation.
Right.
Be quiet and know that I'm my God. Yeah, it's just real nice and simple. You can develop that into chanting. You can, you know, I put some of the other stuff in there for them to get an idea of what they're trying to accomplish. Basically, they're trying to get a higher state of consciousness, and that's when they make their conscious contact at a higher state. But this is a good way to get them started. So a lot of the stuff is on the website.
Nice. I can't wait to explore your website more. I mean, for me, it kind of calls back to my sponsor saying, you know, you're going to have thoughts of using it. It's just you don't have to act on it. And that's in meditation is, you know, you might have a thought. It doesn't mean you're not meditating or you're doing it wrong. It's just you don't have to act on the thought. You can sort of watch
and
it, and it slows down.
Yeah.
And I do that in the morning before my, you know, the committee wakes up or whatever, you know, vernacular you want to call it, you know, before my inner critic or my, you know, addict or what have you wakes up. I do that, and I do it after, you know, I give thanks, and I read my just
you know,
day
sure
or day
you'll be
meditation.
a great sponsor once you get to it. Let me tell you, there's some guy out there
that's just
like you waiting for you. He's waiting
well,
for you
wants
right now.
Well, if anybody
wants
to holler at me through my website, I'm always happy to spend some time with another person in our family, you know. And I thank you so much for what you do here. I think it's an awesome service, and I'm really honored to be on this program with
you. Well, thank
you. Your character. And I hope people got something out of, I know they did.
Well, we never know for sure, right? You know, it kept me sober, kept you sober. Harold didn't drink for the hour. So, that story, you know. I like to think of it this way, Dick. They're going to love me when I'm dead. and not a minute before. Same Patrick, soon after he died.
Well, I love you both. Love everybody out there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for letting me be of some service here. And,
you're welcome.
Look forward to speaking to y'all again.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
And let's mention your website one more time. How do you spell it?
It's Dick Jokes with a dash in between, Dick and Jokes. DICK-JOKES.com/RECOVERY. www.dick-jokes.com/recovery. I use a stage name for the sake of anonymity. So you can Google Dick Satori, S-A-T-O-R-I, and you can find me that way as well. There's this little video of some of my comedy on my
recovery. Oh, that's great. Thank you.
As well. And I'd definitely love to hear any feedback from people, too.
Sure.
So, you guys keep fighting a good fight. And thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Thanks again.
All right. My pleasure.
Terrific. Amen.
Well, in closing, we like to say that if you're looking for sponsorship information, it's Rum Radio at rumradio.org. And in closing, we're full of 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages. We cover the globe. I don't know how many globes there are, but we cover one of them. I'm quite content. So if you're looking for sponsorship information, remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.